Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
Moona Links is where we are today for a special edition of the Breakfast Club. Thanks to AFL Sports Reading, the AFLPA, for the inaugural AFL Player Outduction Program. We often hear about the induction program of players coming into the game, but not so much the outduction where the players are exiting the game. Being the inaugural, it's the first one. So the idea and the genesis behind of this is from a gentleman who played many games for the Mighty Hawks. In fact, his 163 games between 1994 and 2004 were nothing short of stellar. And he's now the national program manager, or the national manager for the AFL program at AFL Sports Ready. Raiden Tallis is his name, and he joins us on the Breakfast Club. Morning, Raiden.
Thanks, Harf. Good to be here, mate.
Great to have you here. Great idea, this. I was speaking to my father last night about what we were doing this morning, and he said, what are you doing tomorrow? Because he lives down here. And I said, we've got the AFL outduction program. And he looked at me and he goes, that's a great idea. Because he's in a corporate business. And he thought, everyone talks about induction, but no one talks about outduction. Where did this idea come from?
Oh, I think it's an idea that we've been really thinking about for many, many years. We've, as an industry and AFL Players Association and Sports Ready, well, I think we do a pretty good job at inducting the young players into the system, focusing more on their off-field development and welfare. And then throughout their career, they're well supported, but there was always this thing that over the years we spoke about that once they finish up, whether it's at the age of 22 or 32, and whether it's zero games or 200 games, we needed to better support the players on their transition out. So that was the idea behind it. It's been years in the making. We've finally been able to get some funding to put something together. We're really excited that we've got some good intake from the players that have transitioned recently.
How much of this idea and the concept has come from direct feedback from the players and the discussions you've had with them in the last 10 years or so?
I think it's always trying to understand whose responsibility is it for the transition out. Yep. There's so many stakeholders within the AFL that support players and do a really good job. And that ranges from the club to the Players Association to other stakeholders to player managers. And I think it's a job of all of us, really. We certainly support them when they're under the bright lights of the MCG, and I think it's only fitting that we give them that support. And some guys need it more than others. So, we'll continue to do that. This is the first time we've run this. As I said, the support that we've received from the players and the feedback from the players so far after day one has been really, really positive, and we'll just build on that for years to come.
So, Radar, why is it so important for an outduction? Most people will sit here listening to us this morning and say, when I finish up with my employer, they don't do anything for me. They just, see you later, son, go and find your next job. But from my point of view, and I'll put my player manager hat on, they don't have the experiences that others have had throughout their 20s particularly. So why is it important to provide them with skills and options to allow them to live the rest of their working life somewhere?
I think that's the major point, Rammer, is these players probably don't identify the transferable skills that they acquire as an AFL player. Some get it. Some understand it. But even speaking to a couple of the younger guys yesterday, guys that have been in the system 2 years and now being delisted, it really highlighted them to them yesterday that they are valuable employees or prospective employees for employers out there because of the skills they bring. We can't forget that these guys have made it to the elite level of a high-performing team, and I think many organisations out there look for those skill sets.
So what are those skills then that you think that can be applied into the workplace straight away?
Oh, I think you can just, off the top of my head, it's your work ethic, it's your time management skills, it's your ability to work as a team. And what we're going to hear from today, we've got a lot of host employers coming down, and a lot of these host employers have former players that are now employees with them. And I think that they really see the value. This morning we got CBRE, who are coming down, a commercial real estate company. They've employed about 7 players over the last 6 years in roles. And they don't do that out of the goodness of their heart because they're massive Carlton supporters. They actually see that their skill set is very good at talking to people and networking. And so I think that those are the skills that we need to really get these players to identify, because sometimes they don't see it in themselves.
I've got a question for both of you, and it's a difficult one, but is there a percentage on players that get to this point where they're terrified, or and what is the percentage of players that actually are embracing getting onto the next phase of their life?
Oh, look, from my point of view, no doubt. There's guys that... And we encourage all our guys that we manage to make sure that they're doing something outside of their football when they're playing, whether that's university, TAFE, job placement, working in a charity. They're the four options that we think are probably the easiest ones to do. But still, towards the end of their career, that they come to here and they're scratching their head worrying about it. Now, I think what Sports Ready are doing here, because they don't understand, I don't think the players that finish the game actually fully understand the skills that they have. They're probably scared to, they go, well, I just played football. That's it. They're probably scared to talk about, well, I showed commitment, I showed work ethic, I showed professionalism, I turned up, I made sure. You know, as simple as turning up somewhere every day on time is what an employer is looking for. They don't get that. Yeah, they don't think about that. All they think about is, I've played football for 5 years or 10 years or 15 years. They don't think about the other skills that they've acquired through that time.
Can you put a percentage on it, or is it too difficult, Wade?
I don't know if there's a percentage, but I think it's one of those ones that everyone's different. And even we've found that the 37 guys down here, there's ranging experience and ranging needs for what they need. So Michael Jamieson, for example, he's down here more to further his network. He's got a good job. Whereas other guys here, they are that vulnerable player that's looking for the next opportunity. But I think, like, out of the sessions that we ran yesterday, they're starting to see the light. And, you know, unfortunately, I shouldn't say it like that, but what Ramil's doing with his players, as far as encouraging them to do things while they're playing, will better set them up for the transition. And most of the guys in the room, and Andrew Gallucci, who I met yesterday, a Carlton player, is down here investing his time. He's a qualified accountant. He's worked in an accounting firm prior to getting drafted, but he wants a change of industry. But he's down here. So there's guys that have done a lot, and the study thing is massive, and a lot of players are getting education now, which is great.
So, Rado, what's your process that Sports Ready go through with helping these guys, not only while they're playing or after they're playing, but even before they're playing? I know there's some guys that don't finish school, you're able to place them. I know there's a lot of guys that you're able to place in TAC Cup clubs to start doing some administration. So what's the process there for you guys?
Well, we've been running a program since 2002 called the Next Goal Program. And I think throughout a player's career, there's great support from the Players Association with funding to go and do education and all that. I love this Next Goal Work Placement Program because it's real experience and it gets a guy in front of real employers, and the amount of jobs that have come from that, because the employer identifies them as a player, a person with a profile, great networking skills, the practical skills they can build on, but fundamentally they're good people. So, you know, I think of a story yesterday from Ben Ross, who did a Next Goal Work Placement while he was playing at North Melbourne with the practice with Jason Cunningham. You know, he worked there for 4 weeks. It was almost like a four-week job interview. By the end, he got employment for 6 months. That rolled over 12 months into full-time, you know. So there's numerous stories like that, which is really good.
The other question I had it's for both of you, but mainly for Raiden. The whole thing about players when they get to the end about wanting to stay in football because they don't know anything different. Now, I've just got a text message from a former player saying that you get institutionalised almost, that it's almost a safer option to stay in the game because that's what you know. So you go into welfare or development or into coaching because that's safe. But it's almost what you're doing, Raiden, is completely different. It's to actually get them out of that bubble and get them into... could we call it normal society almost?
Yeah, and that's right. But there's also those players that want to stay in the game. And I suppose the game's growing where there's a lot more opportunities and well-paid jobs within the game.
So do you see it as safer to stay in there, or is that being unfair?
No, I think it's individual. I think all these players come together on an AFL list because they can all play football, but they've all got different personalities and different interests. Some guys just know that they'll become a physio or they'll work with animals or something like that. You know, I remember 10 years ago placing Matthew Stokes with the Melbourne Zoo, working with the big cats there because that was his passion. You know, so I think there are those guys that genuinely want to stay in football because they love football. And I think you're right, there are a couple that feel like that's a safe option because that's all they know.
At times, I think, yeah, you're right. It is it's the safe option, but it's also probably it keeps their status a little bit as well.
Yeah.
Whereas going into the workforce, you're basically starting from scratch. You're starting from the bottom of the tree again. So particularly an older guy that's, you know, played 10 or 15 years and had a really successful career, it's hard to get that into their head that, you know what, if I go into the workforce now, I'm going to the ground floor and I've got to work my way up where, you know, they've played football for 10 or 15 years. You know, they're in the penthouse at the moment with that status.
But there's also, I think, a factor of you going into the workforce and there's that element of normalcy, whereas if you stay as a coach or stay involved in an AFL, you've still got that buzz. Yeah. And, Huff, you've spoken about this. When you finish playing, losing that buzz of not being an AFL footballer,
it's the win and
being
win,
normal.
Win and, it's the win and loss on the weekend that you miss.
Yeah.
You work all week to get to Saturday or Sunday or whenever you play, and you know you're going to have a win or a loss. Whereas in the workforce, you don't necessarily get that same buzz.
But what about the status of being an AFL footballer, being involved in an AFL football team and what goes with that?
I reckon that might be overplayed a bit. I reckon particularly if you've had a career that spans more than perhaps 5 years, that the novelty wears off a bit. It's your job. It is your job, and you understand that as a player. And whilst there's some trappings that go with it that are quite nice and quite advantageous, it's not the big... It's one of Hollywood superstars or that type of thing where it's massive news. I mean, there's 800 of them.
Yeah,
the country. There's plenty of them. I think it's overplayed a bit, the AFL thing.
I think they get excited to get out of the system, a lot of them. You know, it's a big relief and to go and learn something new. And I think it's an exciting time for these players to... All the energy and they've put into their preparation and into their football training, they can now refocus that and redirect that focus to something else and being successful at something else. And I think of a guy that's going to come down today, I've already mentioned, but CBRE and Nick Lower. Nick Lower works for CBRE now, and you couldn't find a more passionate salesman. You know, all his energies are going into being the best salesman he can be for the company. The same passion he probably put into his career that spanned over three clubs.
And Big Brother.
That was his brother.
That was his brother.
Yeah, that was his brother. Yeah. That was Ed. Yeah, Ed was a big brother.
But Ed's in the real estate game too.
What about the transition? The guys that have to make, they're out there training every day, lifting weights every day, but then having to sit under a desk from 9 to 5. How do you find that transition for the guys?
Once again, I think if they try to do that throughout their career and, you know, do some sort of work placement and slowly transition, but I think it's tough. And I think it's tough for every one of us. I don't think there's one player out there that's ever transitioned that wouldn't give it back, wouldn't go back to being an AFL player. So I think that's something that they've just got to experience and get through. But you're right. You know, it's to get paid good money to hang out with your mates and to stay fit is a great career. But they've had to move on.
Big Will Minson has been good enough to join us this morning down here at Moonalinks. Day two of the outduction program. Morning, Will.
Morning, Huff. How are you doing?
Okay, very well. Thank you, buddy. Nice to have you in early, bright and early on a Wednesday morning. How's the morning suit you?
Yeah, well, the weather like this, it's not too hard to get out of bed. It's a beautiful day down here. If it had been cold and windy, I'd probably taken a bit longer to walk the 100 metres from the broom to the studio.
But you didn't have to get too stressed about that because of the weather. Hey, what's the last 12 months been like for you?
Yeah, it's been a fabulous 12 months. Yeah, really, really enjoyed my time so far out of the game. I've done quite a bit of travel since I finished. My wife and I went over to Europe for the summertime. As I was saying before, it's something that most footballers can't do, is see Europe in June, July. So that was a bit of a bucket list item for me, and we've recently returned. And yeah, it's been a great try. Also, I should fair to say, I got married in November as well. I better not forget that.
You should mention that.
It was a year anniversary a few weeks ago. So, yeah, after I retired, we got married and then set off and saw a bit of the world, and we've got back to town now.
Was that always part of the plan when you retired to get going? Because you played 13 years in the AFL system, 191 games with the Doggies. You're an All-Australian. You're a VFL Premiership player in the end to finish your career in 2016. Was that part of the plan to get away?
Yeah, definitely. You know, we all know how hard the game is and how much time you put in and how many, you know, how much dedication is required, and there's always a question of wonder what this place is like and I wonder what that place is like, and you do have limited opportunities to travel, especially when you engage in study. It took me 12 years to get my Bachelor of Science at Melbourne Uni, and so more often than not, when the season finishes, you're either having surgery to repair things that have broken down during the year, or in a lot of other people's cases, you're catching up on all the subjects you've missed and all the exams you've got to attend. So I remember many pre-seasons sort of spending the whole off-season studying, and then when the exams finish, the very next day you're back to day one pre-season. So I kind of said when I retire, I'm going to reward myself and go overseas and see as much as I can and get back to finding work and starting a family once I've sort of ticked off a few of those items.
So, Will, studying whilst you played football, was that something that you wanted to do, or is it something that you thought was a good thing to help your football?
I think initially I was, really wanted to do it. I was from a long line of engineers. My father was an engineer. Mm-hmm. My brother was an engineer. And if I had I not been drafted, I would have gone down that path. And early in my career, throughout my whole career, tremendous challenge to try and to fit it all in around training times. But every now and then, you'd get a lot of satisfaction from playing good games of football and also managing a degree at the same time. So I did get a lot of satisfaction out of that and a lot of enjoyment. And then, we all know we're going to have something to do when our career comes to an end, whenever that might be. So it wasn't hard for me to stay engaged with that. I actually thought it was one of the easiest things in the world in terms of university. You've just got all these short-term goals. You've got X amount of years you can have to attend there and how many subjects, and you can just tick them off one at a time. So I actually found that much easier than after I graduated, when I didn't have any more study immediately ahead of me. It's like then the question of, okay, what am I going to do with the little bit of extra time I had? And that was probably harder after I graduated.
So now where are you heading are you working now since you've got back, or what's the plan now moving forward? We're here for the outduction, obviously, of AFL players. Have you got a job now lined up, ready to go, or is that something that you're still deciding on where you want to go with that?
Yeah, I don't have anything lined up immediately. I think I was hopeful when I went overseas I'd come up with some million-dollar idea and I'd come back to Australia and I'd get straight to work on that. I even thought at one stage I'd be able to get to work on it over there. But I kind of started enjoying myself and a little bit too much, and those ideas weren't as forthcoming as I was hoping for. So now I'm looking at the fields that most interest me and where I might be able to seek some meaningful employment. And I knew I had some time to work on that. I was very, very lucky as a result of having a long career that I have been afforded that time. I know there are a lot of players that don't have that opportunity, that really for whom cash flow is an immediate issue from the moment they leave the game. They have to find work, and they're pressured into getting work just to pay bills. And I was very fortunate that wasn't an immediate problem for me. So thus I said, right, I'm going to go travel the world, and when I come back I can put my head to what it is that I'm going to do.
So have you changed your mind through a 10-12 year career from what you might have thought you'd be doing at 21 when you finished footy compared to now? Are the ideas completely different, or are they all kept reasonably similar? You talked about what your family has done professionally.
Yeah, I don't know how much my mind has changed about what I thought I would do, because whilst I was playing football, the idea of getting a degree was such a big challenge that for 12 of my 14 years, I was just focused on that next subject, and some of them were quite tough, and some of them I had to repeat once and maybe again, some of the harder math subjects in my engineering course. And so as a result of that just being such a monumental challenge, I was like, okay, well, I just have to put all my energy into that. So there wasn't a lot of forecasting of what I might do at the other end. You certainly learn industries and environments where you perhaps aren't going to have any interest and where you don't want to explore. But I think so much has changed too in the 14 years of my career, that opportunities are different now with running a business, with e-commerce, with opportunities to run your own show, so to speak. I think it's much more accessible for people.
Can I ask you, did you love being an AFL player, or it was just that you were good at it?
No, not at all. It was like good at it. No, I absolutely loved it, besotted with it. There's no way you can rock up every day, do what you do, train as hard as you do, for as long as I did and not love the game. I absolutely loved the game. Loved getting out there and actually people say, do you miss playing footy? And you still get questions, do you want to come play in the locals or the amateurs or things like that? I've got absolutely no desire to play any football ever again. But the one thing that I really did miss and do miss right now is tackling. And if there's anything I could just do, like right now, it'd be to tackle someone.
It's like that's hurting people.
He's got to speak to Matthew.
I really miss just tackling. And there's not a lot. I mean, yeah, I can go do some sparring if I miss boxing. I could go and do some weightlifting if I mix weightlifting. But I don't miss any of that. I just want to do a tackling drill or a handball game where you can really just put your whole energy and effort into someone and then lay on top of them and let them hurt you.
This is good news because I've got a 2-year-old that I cannot control. Yeah. So you're more than welcome to go and wrestle here. Yeah.
Well, forget the on-field stuff because you had obviously a terrific career. If you could go back to the start now, would you change anything about how you set up your life off the field through your football career?
I think, ironically, my encouragement towards younger players about engaging in study and things like that, I'd tell them to wait a little bit. I mean, I went straight out of school, straight into full-time footy, straight into trying to squeeze every spare minute into doing some study. And I think the demands of AFL now are so much greater than what they were when I started, and time commitment especially, and we all talk about how the game gets harder. I think conserving my energy and finding ways to just basically to have more energy to train and to perform and just to rest. Yep. I never really allowed myself much time for rest. I was the kind of person that always had to be doing something, and if I was ever just sitting still, I thought I was not using my time effectively. And I think having gone throughout my career, especially towards the end, I realized the value of rest. And how does that relate to, you know, I think you're asking more of a financial question, perhaps?
It's more a general question of how you see yourself now when you finish your career. Is it where you exactly where you wanted to be, where you thought you would be at the start of your career?
Yeah, well, I mean, at the start of the career, I mean, you asked me if I loved the game. I think there's a perception early in my career that because I had all these interests that, you know, Will who, you know, where's he come from? He didn't play any state level football, and I went pick 20, and all the articles were, you know, he's about 5'9", 6'7", he plays down back in the midfield and a bit like forward. Like, they had no idea. And I think a lot of that stuck with me early. I said a couple of things in interviews saying, you know, if I didn't get drafted, I would have gone to Germany on an exchange. And they're like, oh, so you're German, eh? And that kind of stuck with me forever. And it's like, oh, so you speak 12 languages? And it got tiring trying to defend any of that. And right. So I didn't deny it. Prospered. All of a sudden, I play 12 instruments and speak 10 languages and study 5 degrees. And
you're very talented.
Very talented. Very talented.
Employable now. Will. Yeah, yeah.
And in an environment where people are all too keen to shoot you down, here are people saying, you know, largely incorrect but still positive things. I just kind of let it go.
George Costanza type of activity.
Very George Costanza.
But you can't play for as long as I did and not love the game. Like, you know, we're all competitive beasts. I grew up wanting to be a footballer from about, from a young age. Yeah. And then only really thought it was possible probably around year 10 or 11. And then when you get drafted, like every kid, it's like, well, I hope I'm here to hang around and maybe get a game. And then when you get a game, you hope you want to get another one. I never could have thought I'd play, nearly 200 games and especially All Australian in 2013 was an incredible achievement. It's something I'm really proud of. A heap of finals that I couldn't get across the line, those three prelims and 8, 9, 10 that we just didn't get there. You know, life could have been different had we won one of those premierships for a whole range of people during that period. I'm really proud of what I achieved and certainly you ask any kid that plays 10, 20, 5 games, you say, if that was all you played, would you be happy? You say, well, that'd be incredible.
We've talked this morning about the time management requirements to be an AFL player and the way that the system structured you. Got to be good with your time. And you mentioned before when you're talking about university, you love the structure of short-term goals. The project, the assignments had to be done, the semester had to be done, the term was fixed. You knew what was coming up against you. So with that being said, do you have a vision of what you might be suited to? You seem to like goals, short-term goals or things to deal with in the short term.
I like connecting people and negotiating and If you walk into a place and someone tells you that there's no room, I get a great enjoyment of trying to find room in that place. And whether it's, sorry, sir, bar's full, that's like red flag to a bull there. It's like, right, how many people can we get in and out? What's another way of doing it? And, you know, through engineering, you always train with problem solving, things like that. So, I've got, you have the grand ideas. I really want to run a travel aviation program. I recently learnt to fly, and I want to fly around the country in an aeroplane and showcase all the amazing places that are really only accessible by accessible by plane. You know, there's 100 different four-wheel drive fishing and camping programs on a weekend, but I can't think of too many that are done out of a Cessna. So, you know, what do I want to do? I'd love to go and do that. Is that going to pay for the bills like right now? Maybe not. And that's the challenge, to find something that, you know, will support a family, but also gives me the time to, you know, explore some you know, different interests.
Thanks to AFL Sports Radio looking after us. The AFLPA involved in, also in the inaugural AFL Outduction Program, a two-day affair for 38, I think it is, players that have exited the game in the last 12 months. One of those is Anthony Morabito, who was picked four in the 2009 National Draft, and in his 7 years in AFL footy, played just 26 games because of three horrific knee reconstructions, but he's been good enough to join us this morning on The Breakfast Club. Morning, Anthony.
Thanks for having us.
No worries, buddy. You've flown across from Perth for this, so you're pretty serious about this post-football situation.
Yeah, and it's in the middle of exams, so...
Really?
Tried to sneak some study in last night, but a couple of beers last night didn't really get that, done.
That was never going to happen, no. But I appreciate the effort you made to try. What are you studying, just by the way, while we're there?
I'm finishing off a commerce degree at the Curtin University back in Western Australia. I'm looking at the management and a bit of finance type stuff. So I did it since I was a year before I was drafted.
Yep.
And was able to sort of knock it off throughout my degree, throughout my footy career. Obviously, the injuries, in some respects, it sort of makes it easier to do it. But I probably found that your time was taken up a bit more when you're injured, because you're having to focus on yourself and then be a part of the team. So there was a couple of semesters I did, defer.
You can get consumed with negativity when you go through situations like you did through your career, and you keep hurting yourself and missing so much football when all you really want to do is play football. How challenging were those periods for you?
Yeah, they're really tough. It's funny, I was having this chat with someone the other day. It's really just was really important not to listen to all the external noise, whether that be people close to you or the media or just people you meet in the street. You tend to get caught up in all that negative emotion. So from my perspective, it was always about striking a balance between how much you absorb and take in and how much you just deflect. So I probably learnt that at a young age, fortunately, but it probably made me grow up a bit quicker than I would have liked.
Do you think it's given you an advantage finishing career, retiring from the game and deciding to move on, because you've had to deal with the perspective of footy's not everything because you haven't been able to play it for 7 years through your career?
In some respects. I think I still have a kick in the waffle, still involved at Claremont, so... Yeah. From that perspective, I still really enjoy being involved. It's definitely given me probably a more mature perspective on how much footy actually meant to me and how much I need to actually, if I want to provide for a family and stuff in the future, I need to sort of get my ducks in a row.
So, Anthony, how important was study to your recovery when you're going through the knee reconstruction? Probably more from a mental point of view.
Yeah, it was really important throughout various stages. I think when you initially first do a knee and you're in that sort of traumatic phase, having something to automatically switch your focus to was really important. For me, I probably did it in the first half of the year, and then I needed a break and usually went on holidays, which in hindsight would have been good to... I would have probably finished my degree a bit quicker, but no, it really helped with the balance because, these days in football, it's every single day and there's meetings every single day, and if you're only consumed by the game plan and your footy club and what's going on, it's very hard to switch off. So I used to take night classes, and that was my way out.
You took night classes?
Oh, like evening classes. So you just go in and do it. Like, I used to have an online evening class that they'd set up, which was great.
So you took the path of study, obviously, whereas other guys might go and work. Why was study the one for you, where it could have been going into a job placement or the like? Why was study always the one for you?
Oh, well, I grew up on a farm about an hour and a half south of Perth. So I, my mother more so was more really keen on getting into uni and doing well in my studies. So I finished my studies in 2008 and moved to Perth and started studying before I was drafted. So I was able to do a year before. Already had sort of a grounding, and I knew that was what I wanted to do.
As the dust settles now on your AFL career, do you still feel cheated, or do you feel cheated with what happened to you? I mean, a top five draft pick, and you'll never really know how good you could have been. Does that sit comfortably with you now, or do you still sort of stew on it?
Oh, man, I'm still 26, so, yeah, it's always going to be a process. I think in the perfect world, you'd love to play 200 games and premierships and best and fairest and the like, but, yeah, that wasn't to be for me. But I was still fortunate. I had some really, really good memories. Like, I was able to play in my first year, play on the MCG in finals, and play with some really quality players like Matthew Pavlich and Nathan Fyfe. So I know I'm more fortunate than a lot of people that have either made their way onto the list and made it off a bit quicker. But, yeah, there's definitely always going to be a level of, not regret, but, yeah.
What if?
Yeah, there's always going to be that question.
And I think it's important that you reminded us here that you're still playing footy. You're playing in the waffle. How are you, or how is your body? How are your knees? You feel like now that you're normal again, if that being disrespectful to your knees?
No, funnily enough, the knee sort of in the last couple of years of my career wasn't really a massive issue. I had a quad that sort of finished me off in my last year, so I was playing for our affiliate side, Peel Thunder, did my quad in the prelim, and they went on to win it, and that was the end. So it was a hard... So when I finished up, I was sort of ready just to go like this, and then you have 2 or 3 months off, and you realise how fun a football club and the environment is. You just get to, especially from, I think from a mental health point of view, you get to go in 3 times a week, have a chat to 40 guys that are probably in the same sort of space of life, and get anything off your chest. It's very hard to sort of create that environment, I think.
Do you see yourself playing football for a long time now still? Do you see yourself maybe going back and playing local football somewhere in Perth after you finish at Claremont?
Yeah, I think I'm from the country, so they'd be very keen to get back down there and pull in the boot to the boys.
How good is the team in Harvey?
There's
only 2,600 people in the town.
There's 2 teams in the town.
Is there?
Yeah. We've got Harvey Fresh, Harvey Beef, so there's some serious backers down there.
It's a cross-town rival.
Cross-town rival.
Exactly.
Which one are you? Which side are you? Fresh or Beef?
I've got some cattle, so Beef now.
Do you get a meat tray for best on ground?
Yeah, I think they still do.
I asked Will Minson before when he started what became a 13-year career. Has he changed his mind on what he wanted to be post-football in life? Your career being so different, do you have a different view on life and different view on what you want to do post-football than what you did when you first started, even though the career was a lot shorter?
Without a doubt. I think when you're ticking off one unit of uni a semester, your interests can sort of wane pretty quickly. If you're doing a finance unit one semester and then you're going economics and then you're management or marketing, you sort of get a taste of everything and you go, okay, well, I could probably do that, potentially do that, don't like that. So I've definitely chopped and changed what I'd want to do. So I think from my perspective, it's now I'm at the state, I worked part-time with a company back in Perth. It was an agribusiness company and it was involved in the business development sort of side of things. So I got a really good broad range of roles that sort of gave me a good understanding of business. And that's where I knew that my interests lie in terms of I wanted to work with people. I wanted to be able to see the growth phase of a business and be involved in anything, all that strategic management type stuff. So that's really where my passion lies. And I think it's just about tapping into the network, which we spoke about yesterday, and finding people, mentors, and people that are willing to sort of give you advice and push you in that direction.
Well, if there's anyone that deserves a bit of good luck post-football, I reckon it might be you, Anthony, after what you had to go through and endure through your AFL career. Well done. One of my favourite ever people. Played 179 games of AFL footy in 11 years for the Hawks and the Roos. He's a 4-time leading goal kicker, 2 at each club. He's a very good man. Nathan Thompson joins us on The Breakfast Club. Morning, Tomo.
Danny boy. Always nice to catch up. How are you, mate?
Very well, thank you. Nice to have you as part of our program today. You're speaking to the players today after this. The morning starts away about 9:30, I think it is, this morning. Your transition from footy to normal life, how was it for you? I mean,
It was definitely interesting. Probably a bit of... I was pretty scared, to be honest, of leaving football life. And coming out of high school, certainly school wasn't my go. I worked really hard to, you know, get a good opportunity in AFL. And then after that, I really didn't have a great grasp of where I was heading. A bit like you, I really enjoyed the media side of things. I had some good opportunities through football there, but had nothing really locked down at the end of football to say, hey, you're going to be able to earn a living to a certain point where married with 3 kids was going to be able to you know, support myself and the family
yep.
moving forward. So there was a bit of fear to where that was. And my whole theory and, I suppose, strategy around that was I'm just not going to take a break. So as soon as footy finishes, I'm going to find enough contracts, enough things to keep me going and to keep me occupied so that I don't have any downtime. So that is what I did. End up picking up some media contracts, end up picking up a leadership program that I ran for V-Line, travelling around country areas. So it was a lot of media and then a couple of other bits and pieces that I moved into that actually just kept me going and gave it was really good for me, but gave me a chance to then work through which way I was heading and what I liked. And it was a slightly different exit to I heard Will Minson before saying when travelling. So I chose the exact opposite path to that.
How long did it take you then post-career? As you said, you had a few different contracts, so actually nail down then what you wanted to do. Was it just a matter of trying different things until you found out what it was that was going to probably satisfy you and motivate you for the next 30 years of your life? Or was it more about, well, this is actually going to be the best decision financially for my family, then I know I can continue to support them?
Yeah, the last thing you mentioned is correct. For me, number one, firstly, was just to work out how I can support my family. So that's always been my major goal. The most important thing is how can I support my wife and kids to make sure that they're not wanting and I'm not wanting. So first and foremost, I need to make money. I'll certainly work through the whole, I think, balance of life and satisfaction part as I go on. Now, it's been 2008 was my last year in AFL football. We're now 10 years down the track. And to be honest, I mean, that whole period has been a transition and a journey for me to find out what that is. And I don't know how other people think, but in the end, I worked. For me, it became clear that the major thing that I really wanted to achieve out of my working life and family life was more time being involved with my wife and kids in their sport, which gives me just great reward. So locally now I'm involved in the basketball, local basketball club. I'm coaching a junior footy team. I help the seniors do their recruiting. And so that I suppose, is me as a person, is I'm a people person. Family, obviously, number one. Now, I've actually gone through to working at a beer company in sponsorship over to a sports apparel company, and this was all while I was calling AFL footy for SEN and Croc Media. But it wasn't until we made a decision 2 years ago that the city wasn't really for me. I just felt that, you know, I was a bit sick and tired of climbing all over people, sitting in traffic. We decided to actually move back to Kyneton, where I grew up, and just take a job locally at Toyota. A friend of mine had just bought into the Toyota business up there, and I called him seeking opportunities of employment because I wanted to get back more time with my family instead of sitting in traffic. I wanted to go and coach my kids at training instead of sitting there on Punt Road trying to get home from Richmond to Doncaster. And that is actually what led me into now being a sales manager in a Toyota franchise. And really, now seeing my pathway or my future from an employment point of view, but more so from a lifestyle balance as well.
Can I ask you, are you a different person with... Because your life is so different now. Are you a different person now than what you were as an AFL player? And even the dynamic of you and your family when you're a... Because everyone talks about being an AFL footballer is such a selfish life to lead and all that sort of thing. Now you're a fully-fledged family man. Are you a different person?
I'm a better person. I'm a better person, absolutely. And I think that's just a part of the life. That's a part of your journey. As a footballer, no doubt. I didn't get it at the time. And I was, you know, Libby and I were married quite young, you know, pretty similar time to when Half and Beck got married. We all sort of at same age group sort of all got married and all the rest of it. And at the time, I was very selfish. And I look back at that now and go, gee, as a young guy, I didn't get that, and I certainly didn't have the balance with work, which was my footy and my family life right at the time. And certainly, like everything, for me, it's been a really enjoyable journey right through. So looking back on footy now, you know, I've got great memories. At the time, it was tough, like, and I really struggled with certain parts of it, with the professionalism side of it. But to look back now over that, you know, that 20-year journey or 22-year journey over since I first started playing AFL footy, back in the 90s, it's one that is very rewarding, and it's really good to look back on it and see with the path that I've ended up taking.
Tommy, you obviously, unfortunately, had the mental health issue when you're playing football. Is there a way, or would have you done things differently when you started your career to prepare yourself for the rigours and the demands of football now? If you were talking to, say, a younger group of footballers, what advice would you give them at the start of their career about the rigours and how hard AFL football actually is?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, Rammer. I definitely don't look at it as unfortunate, anything to do with the mental health side of things. That was, you know, it's a part of me. Mm. It's a part of, what I suppose has built me to today as well. And I think if that didn't happen and I didn't actually go through that journey of being honest and actually speaking about that and dealing with it, I don't think I'd be here today. Mm. I actually would have left football at that time back in 2004 and probably would have disappeared off the planet. So from that perspective, that was all part of it. It's really hard to sit here and say that there is a certain piece of advice for young people to how they can prepare themselves for AFL footy, because I know going in there, I had no idea. Like, I went down there as a 18 or 19-year-old young country guy. And walking through those doors, I was so backward from where you'd need to be to really hit the ground running in that environment. Advice would be, obviously, be as professional as you possibly can and understand how tough it is, both mentally and physically. I don't think I ever really got that right throughout my career, in being either mentally up near 100% or physically at the same time. Because when I sort of look back, when I was... certainly at North Melbourne for a couple of years, when I moved over from Hawthorn to North Melbourne, I actually got myself very close to that and played some great footy and consistent footy for a couple of years. But for me, I found it very hard to keep that consistency. And I suppose for whatever works for you as a person, trying to find that, the right balance, if you like, but understand how hard it is and make sure you do prepare yourself as well as you possibly can for the rigours that are going to be there.
Michael Jamieson and Kane Lucas are two gentlemen that spent a fair bit of time in the Navy Blue. Kane, a couple of times, spent a bit of time at West Coast anyway, over there at the Eagles. But they've joined us here as part of the proceedings this morning. Good morning, boys.
Morning.
Morning.
Thanks for having us.
Now, it's all about transition today and dealing with that. Jamo, for you first up, you were part of the MRP this year.
Was it
a great career decision?
You have to ask me in a month after Steve Hocking's sort of jinx it, I guess. But for me, it was a great way to stay involved in footy and not give the weekends up, which is what I was looking forward to post-playing career. So I really enjoyed it. And you're never going to please everyone on the MRP, so... I just took it for what it was and had a good time.
What was Jimmy like to work with? Well, was he just a troublemaker and caused all the problems and was supposed to leave?
He left when it got hard, did he?
Well, he did. Jimmy was the sort of the antagonist with all the controversial decisions, and then snuck out the back door halfway through and left us to deal with it all. So, and hasn't been seen since. So, I've got a word to say to Jimmy when I see him next, I think.
Have you found it easy transitioning from a player to a non-player?
I was ready to finish when my career came to end, so I was one of the lucky ones that, I guess, called it on my time, but it still wasn't easy. It's I don't think you can go from two different careers that would be so opposite, you know, from football to anything, really. But I was lucky enough that my player sponsor for the last 5 years of my career was is now my boss. So and I'd done a little bit of work with him throughout, you know, my last 5 years at playing football, so, and he just said to me, when you finish playing, knock on the door and I've got a job waiting for you. So that made it easier, but there's still certainly a lot of challenges that come with it.
So we'll throw you in, Kane. How important are those networks around football clubs, coterie groups, people that you can speak to? Because there, a lot of those guys that are in coterie groups, you know, all got successful businesses potentially. How important is it for players to take time to speak to them and get to know them and use them for advice?
Yeah, it's really important. And it's especially the young guys need to realise that. The networking you do at those sort of events can really open up doors, and just being proactive and accessing these guys and having them kind of in the background for when things are going to, when you're going to get towards your transition is really important. So, especially a big club like Carlton, we had lots of big influences and people with amazing businesses. So, it's a really important part to keep open in your football career.
We've asked all the guys about this throughout their career? How difficult was it to combine study, to combine preparation for training, even to combine job placement? How difficult was it to do that?
Yeah, well, for me, probably being on the fringe for the last couple of years of my career, it's really hard. You're probably getting some external pressures from the club to try push into the team. So you're trying to put even more resources into getting your footy right. And then you're also aware that, you know, your contract might be up at the end of the year or you might have a 2 years to go. So you're trying to get that perfect balance where, you know, you're getting off-field happiness and that's related to your on-field performance. So it's a real balancing act for some guys.
I guess I was lucky. I had to completed a year of university before I got drafted because I got drafted a little bit older. So that made me realise, as Kay just mentioned, the importance of doing something outside of football. But for a young kid who's trying to break into the team and make a career, it's hard to realise that you need to have that balance because you're trying to put everything into footy. So until you actually take the leap, do something else and realise that you've always played better footy when you're doing something outside of football.
So you're a firm believer in that? You always, even not just you but other guys, play their better football when they're doing something else?
Oh, I certainly believe it. And it's also a reason I think the draft age should go up. Because I wouldn't change a thing the way I came into football, having a year at uni, realising there's a lot more outside in the world than just football clubs. Because, you know, these 18-year-old kids, they go in and they think that's all that exists and it's going to last forever. And it's a really rude shock once it comes to an end. But if you've got that little bit of life experience beforehand, it puts things into perspective and you realise that you do need to prepare yourself for life after football.
So we're keen to put you two together because obviously both former Carlton teammates, but both very different stories. Jamo, you had a very settled career. You're in the leadership group, key defender, would play every week. Different for you, Kane, but I'm not sure how to say this without sort of embarrassing you, but it's a difficult question to ask. That you're a top 10 pick. You know, I think we all thought that you were going to play 10, 12 years in the game and it didn't quite work out. How difficult is that for you to now look back on that now, and has that made it even harder to transition into post-football?
Yeah, just touching on what Jamo said, I probably followed the traditional pathway through my juniors and was quite lucky to be a high achiever in that area, and then unfortunately that probably didn't give me enough exposure to adversity and resilience when I hit AFL. Early on I had some injuries, and then all of a sudden, you're not achieving what you set out to achieve, and it's quite hard to grasp in the time. It was a real journey for me. I had a lot of highs and lows. And, of course, upon reflection, there's a lot of things I changed. But, it's just about now reflecting on the journey, what you got out of it, the positives. That's what I'm at the point in my life at the moment, just reflecting on that and trying to be better for it. So,
I mean, we all wanted to be AFL footballers growing up in the backyard. So in your situation, were you very much, say, as a 15, 16-year-old, I'm just going to be an AFL footballer, I'll worry about the rest when I'm 35. Were you one of those guys, or were you one of the ones that was already thinking about life after football before it started?
Yeah, unfortunately, I was one of those ones. So just very naive, very single-focused. Football was always my dream. And that's what Jemmo mentioned just before, having that life experience and getting out of the bubble after school might be good for if they lift the draft age. I was always in that football bubble and it was always going to be for me. So now transitioning out, it's a part of you's lost a little bit. You lose a bit of your identity in China and build around that. Like I said, there's probably a few things I would have done differently. I would have done some more work experience and been a lot more proactive in my life outside of football. These are things you learn along the way, and I was only young, so.
See, this is we were talking about this, Kane, earlier this morning with Rama as a player manager. And Rama, you mentioned about how you've got a situation where it's much easier for the guys that are 31, 32 that it's sort of naturally coming to an end. Mm. But you're managing guys like Kane, 23, yep. 24, when it all of a sudden realised it's not going the way that we all thought it was going to go.
Yep.
How difficult is that as a manager to have those tough conversations with those players?
Well, absolutely, because the difficulty is with that is their focus is completely still on their football career and wanting to make that. They're not really thinking about what else happens if it all ends tomorrow. And I do get that. because you just want that opportunity as a footballer to last forever. But that's the importance of not starting the journey for life after football late in your career. You've got to start it straight away, as soon as you walk in the door, because if you're drafted, you get a two-year contract straight away. So you've got to start some form of education, work placement. What I want to ask Jamo, do you think footballers now, we're here doing an outduction for guys that have finished up in the game, do you think footballers fully understand what they can actually offer to a potential employer?
No, I don't. When I went into work at the start of this year, I severely underrated and underestimated the skills that do transition into the real world. I had doubts that I've done nothing in this property investment sort of field before, but my boss said, just took me through all the skills that you have in football clubs that either you naturally learn or they teach you around leadership and teamwork and the ability to go to corporate functions and speak to sponsors and therefore network and be personable with high corporates. You don't realise it until you have to go and do it, but there are so many skills these days that kids pick up in football clubs that do transfer into the real world. So I certainly underestimated it, and that's the great thing about this camp is those kids, you can see their eyes light up when they realise they do have all these skills, and they don't have that much to learn to go into a career post football. So it's been a great experience for these young kids especially.
Brad Hodge has decided he wants to get on red in the Big Bash this season with the Melbourne Renegades. Great to have him as part of the best team in the business. And he joins us this morning on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Hodgie.
Yes, very good morning.
Yes, very good morning. Always a very good morning when you're on the program. The Melbourne Renegades. Now, you've seen a couple of teams in the Big Bash. Was it just a matter of time before he came back?
Look, I think I spent some really quality seasons over in Adelaide for the Strikers. And it was nice to be able to come home and sort of play, with the kids that have been here in Melbourne and all, play with the Melbourne Renegades. Play on the MCG against the Stars and play at Etihad. I think it's going to be pretty cool summer.
It's going to be very cool. Great to have you in the Renegade colours. Were you disappointed with the way things seem to have ended at the Strikers?
Of course, but in sport, nothing ends well. I thought that I did pretty well over there and performed, very well to my high standard of cricket, but also, led the team pretty well as captain. Things never end well, as I said, but look, that's okay. That's past, and I really enjoyed my time over there in the Strikers, but I'm certainly looking forward to playing in Melbourne.
What sort of advantage is it, Brad, to have yourself, Cameron White, Aaron Finch, all leaders on the field in a T20 environment where things happen so quickly? Because we often hear about how important leadership is out on the field.
Well, it could be a case of too many cooks in the kitchen in that one, I reckon. straight away, what comes to mind is, two past Australian T20 captains. So I think I'll just add to what those guys already bring to the table. So I'm really looking forward to working with the younger kids. There's some quality players in that lineup for the Renegades. I think it's a really strong squad. And I've just got a specific role which Andrew wants me to do. So I'll help the youngsters, fill that void in a certain period of time. Finchie's on top of the world, played well in India. We'll probably lose him again for half the season, which is always a loss. But Cameron's certainly stepped into his shoes and do a pretty good job.
You kind of half answered the question about, obviously, you're really close with Andrew McDonald and the attraction of almost being like an assistant coach. And is that where you kind of see yourself going down the track as a sort of a short-form coach, even at the international level?
That's what he wanted me, like my role as well, is to try and help with the strategic side of stuff, pretty much planning against opposition, just sort of leading in, prepping players for what's expected and stuff. So I love that sort of role. I really love the strategic management side of sport. So I can't wait to do that. That's and good thing is it's a good friend of mine as well. So when he first approached me to see if I wanted to come to the Renegades, I sort of said, look, yeah, I do, but make sure it's for the right reasons. If I can, you know, impact your side, make it better, then by all means, let's do it. But, you know, if it's just friend having friend, then I said, don't do it. So we were pretty strong on that point that, he was like, mate, we need you to, you know, come and just fill this spot for us, which has been lacking in the last few years. And you know, and you can also help what you've been doing at the Strikers with the younger kids as well. So, we're looking forward to the partnership.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.